We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're recording, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.
This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
For me, it's a life that you're inspired by. It's a life that you love. It's waking up with a calendar which is filled with things that you absolutely love to do, or an empty calendar and you just choose what you do every single day. It's do what you love, love what you do, get paid to do it, and delegate the rest. Like, have a life where you generally wake up and you're excited by looking at your calendar. If you're like, fuck, I gotta go to work, fuck, I gotta do this, fuck, I gotta do this, it's like, that's not a life that I want to live.
Lewis Huckstep is a performance coach renowned for his work coaching high achievers to unlock their full potential and create a life on their own terms. Lewis grew up on Norfolk Island and at a young age was diagnosed with Asperger's, autism and ADHD, experiences which he explains became his greatest gifts. By 22, he owned 3 gyms and was outwardly very successful, but on the inside, he was struggling with burnout and a lack of fulfillment. Everything changed when Lewis developed his Inspired Life method, leaving the fitness world to help coach thousands of people get clear on their passion and purpose. Today's episode is an absolute masterclass on self-development. We get clear on values and why they're important, and Lewis takes me through a live exercise on limiting beliefs, which you can follow along in real time. I know you'll find this episode so valuable. It is such a powerful way to enter the new year with clarity and purpose and alignment. Let's get into the chat. On this podcast, we discuss the learnings of life with extraordinary and everyday people, because every human being has a story and every human being knows what it means to be alive. I'm Georgia May and this is Life Chats. Lewis, welcome to Life Chats.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for making the trip to the Gold Coast and inviting me down.
So excited to chat to you because I feel like a lot of these conversations that I have are with people that have very interesting skill sets or life stories that I'm like definitely learning. But with someone like you, I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot. I just feel that I'm already interested in this space. So it's going to be a pretty amazing conversation.
Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, let's see where we go. So there's a lot of podcasts out there and interviews where you speak about kind of your origin story and what's led you to this point. I don't want to spend too much time talking about that today, but if people are listening, they've never heard of you before, give us a little snapshot as to the work that you do and what sort of experiences have led you to being a fulfillment coach.
I generally will mention being diagnosed as Asperger's, autism, ADHD, and anxiety later on. So had my mental and emotional challenges when I was earlier.
What age was that you were diagnosed?
I can't remember, but I think I was on a podcast this week and she was a speech pathologist, if I can speak English. And she deals with kids on the spectrum, so she wanted me to kind of speak on that. So I shared that the same story. So I can't remember this. My mum just told me about it, but it was my first day on kindergarten or preschool or whatever they call it. I was born on Norfolk Island, which is this really tiny island between Australia and New Zealand. And supposedly my first day of prep or whatever, they call my mum and say, come down here, your son's like out of control, you need to come get him. And apparently mum walked into the room and I was just like pulling all the teacher's hair out and screaming and losing my shit. So there was that plus other signs and things that they thought was interesting or different. I've got 2 older siblings and they flew me to Australia to get tested. They said, I've got Asperger's and on the spectrum, it's going to be different, limited, blah, blah, blah. So those were the seeds that were planted many years ago, or the gifts I were given that I opened up later on. And self-development junkie. I started my healing growth inner work journey when I was 18. I got into the fitness industry, opened up, I was starting in Burley actually. So we're in Burley right now. My first studio was around the corner. And opened up 3 gyms. I was very much like overcompensating though. I wasn't enough. I'm going to prove my worth to the world and show the world how successful I am externally, even though I felt like a piece of shit internally and I wasn't enough. And built 3 gyms by the age of 22, hit a breaking point. Gave one back to a business partner, went through COVID with 2 gyms, did a lot more inner work, found my purpose, wasn't gyms, sold the gyms, sold the last one last year. And I've been coaching the entire time. For anyone that's come from the fitness industry or any personal trainers, your personal trainer generally comes to your therapist and they'll just like talk about their stuff. And I'll just have clients that would come down and I look after my health, I train, I'm decently healthy, but I don't really care too much about protein and calories and macros. It's like, for me, quite basic stuff. It's like, well, why aren't you doing it? And what's triggering you? And what's going on in your personal life? And that's the stuff that I really was interested in. So yeah, I guess those are the breadcrumbs that the universe was giving me over the years. And it just drew me towards where I am today. And yeah, I've been doing it full time for about 3 years, but yeah, I've been coaching people for 10 years and yeah, I love it and having a fun time.
And you're clearly doing amazing work. It's having a lot of impact. Something that you just mentioned is that Asperger's, ADHD and autism were the gifts that you were given. Yeah. How have they improved your life?
I said this on the speech one the other day, but you don't have a disability without a heightened ability. Every pro has a con, every con has a pro. Life's always balanced. So like one for me as an example, so Asperger's or my learning style was very slow. So like if anyone had a kid in class that saying, why, how does that work? Like I was out with me, so I was in learning disabled classes. So because I'm such a slow learner, I'm a very thorough teacher. So there's the balance to those two things. So I just had a healing session with some of my clients, and one of the most common compliments I get is I take quite complex things and break it down and make it simple. And that comes from being a slow learner. So whatever your downsides are, the paradox or balance to that is often your gifts. So like for me, not understanding social settings, that's something I struggle with. Like sometimes I'll just ask abrupt questions that most people wouldn't ask because people are, oh, you're not meant to say that. Like there's an example, I was with my brother and his friend Mitch. Mitch, if you're watching this, we're at a dinner table. I think it was like Christmas or something. We're playing cards together. Monopoly Deal. Have you played that?
Yeah, it's so fun. Oh my God, it's so competitive.
My wife's really good at it. But we're playing it. And it was my brother, my sister and Mitch, which is my brother's friend. And I've known him for a while. And like, we're just playing cards. And this was only like a year or two ago. So I'm in this world. I'm super aware of what people say and what they do. And he makes like this really self-depreciating joke about himself.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm just like, I can't actually remember the words, but it's like, I'm such like a creepy, disgusting old man, something like that. Like get the shit out of himself. And then my brother and sister laughed. And I was like, out of nowhere, I just said, do you realize that you give yourself shit to connect with others? Just like most people won't say it, but I think I'm like, let's just say it, right? So I can pick like very conscious of words, energy and people's traits. So I can zoom in pretty quickly. So like a benefit of, I guess, not really understanding social cues and social settings is I'll just be honest.
What did he say?
He said, that face was like, oh yeah, I do that a lot. And I didn't like turn that into a healing session by any means, but I just kept it going. But I would then follow the vein and go where it's coming from. And
on a top level, why do people do that? Because I notice that a lot. It's like, to relate to you, I have to make myself smaller.
Yeah, it's every motion has a motive. So I would be looking at, depends on the person and depends on kind of the flow that I'm going through, but it'll be, what's the benefits of you doing that? So connection was his. So he's doing that. That's just a strategy that he's developed of how I can connect with people. I talk about trauma, coping strategies and triggers. So it might be an unconscious trigger. I don't think it was because he consciously went into that.
Yep.
So I think it's just a strategy that he developed of how to connect with people. Mm-hmm. So, and I see it all the time. You said you see it all the time too. And I just, there's no right nor wrong. It's not, it's just, is that a healthy, empowered way to live?
Is it serving you?
Great question. So, and that's, I guess, the things I'm looking for, like, why is this person like, I'd say 99% of people understand smoking is not good for you, but why do they smoke? There's benefits to it. Stress, connecting with parents because their parents were smokers, get out of social settings. There'll be benefits to why they do it. Again, is it healthy? Is it empowering? Is it the way that you want to live? What's a healthier alternative? And let's lean into that. And then we look underneath beliefs, trauma, triggers, and just what's playing out for you. So there's never just a one definitive answer. There's generally some lenses I'll look through and angles I look through for why someone is being the version of who they are. But yeah, there's some angles that I'll generally look at.
If you had to just clarify like the key pillars of what you teach, like, and the work that you do, what would they be? You just mentioned a few, trauma and...
Yeah, for sure. So I've just written a book. I should have brought the copy down. I got it the other day.
Yes, I'm excited.
2 weeks today it comes out. So it's called My Inspired Life Method, and 3 big pillars: self-mastery, inner work, skills and strategies. So self-mastery or working on self is understanding who you authentically are. So values, what your authentic values are. Most people don't know what values are. They think they do, but they don't. Purpose, what's your life's purpose? And what's the vision and mission for your life authentically based on who you truly are? Second pillar is inner work. So that's trauma, limiting beliefs and blocks. There's more that goes into inner work, but they're the ones I mainly focus on. There's other ways to do inner work. And then the third pillar is skills and strategies. And that's where the more practical, like planning, execution, systems, processes, skill sets come into it. Because I'm joking, there's like a spectrum. On one side, it's your sort of spiritual hippies who levitate and meditate all day and have crystals everywhere. And I'm very spiritual too. I actually normally have crystals on, but I'm not wearing them today. But those people often are broke as shit and they're not doing anything with their life. They're actually avoiding and bypassing the work of actual taking action. And on the other side of the spectrum, you've got your super analytical, head-heavy systems, processes, tactical people. Those people generally have external success, but they're very unfulfilled. So for me, it's integrated the two, where it's like, yes, be authentic, be your true self, know who you truly are, know your purpose, know your values, live congruently with that, because there's so many challenges if you're not doing that. Have a plan and clarity of who you, what you want, how you're going to get there, what skills and action you're going to take, and take action, but then address the limitations, the blocks that are going to sabotage you from following that. So those are the three big pieces. And then you can obviously dive into like rabbit holes within there.
So you mentioned the book is called An Inspired Life.
The Inspired Life
Method. The Inspired Life Method. Yeah. What is an inspired life?
For me, it's a life that you're inspired by. It's a life that you love. It's a, it's waking up with a calendar, which is filled with things that you absolutely love to do, or an empty calendar and you just choose what you do every single day. It's do what you love, love what you do, get paid to do it, and delegate the rest. Like have a life where you generally wake up and you're excited by looking at your calendar. If you're like, fuck, I got to go to work. Fuck, I got to do this. Fuck, I got to do this. It's like, that's not a life that I want to live.
If someone's sitting in an office booth 9 to 5 thinking, well, my calendar doesn't excite me, but I can't quit my job because it's my income and all the rest.
Yeah.
Where do you start?
Start with where you're at. And I used to be very naive when I first started. I started network marketing. That was actually the business model that we started with. And I was super like unbalanced and just naive back then. And I'd be like, if you don't quit your job and go all in on this, you're not committed. You're not in.
You're in the victim mindset.
Yeah, exactly. So I was super unbalanced back then. So that was 10 years ago. I don't do that anymore. You be realistic. It's like, okay, this is where you're at. You got bills to pay. You got mortgage, you got kids, you got commitments. Great. That's where you are. Where do you want to get to? What's your vision? Well, who are you? What's your values? What's your purpose? What's your mission?
Yep.
And what's your vision? Where do you want to get to? Then what's your plan to get there? And what's the skills? What's the actions? Whether it's you need to learn how to build a business, get into a different career, whatever the problem is. And then again, address those limitations that are going to stop you. So start where you're at, be realistic. And as long as you, everyone that I've met who is where they don't want to be, or they're going through pain or challenge or suffering or whatever it is, can handle it as long as there's a light at the end of the tunnel. When you have no light, that's where you feel depressed, you feel helpless, you feel useless, you feel defeated, you feel whatever. If you've got that light that I can get there and I have hope and faith and trust that I will get there, then you can generally handle a lot of things. So that's where I start.
What is the cost of not living an inspired life?
I guess it's whatever that life looks like to you. So, because everyone's answer to what an inspired life is different. Because for some people, it's having a garden and 2 kids and a job where you don't have to take your work home with you and you can switch off and be present with your kids. For some people, it's to be a workaholic and just love your work and love your mission and give back to it. So,
what about for you?
For me, my highest values are coaching, relationships, and learning. So, I love learning, I love coaching, and I love having meaningful relationships. Then, health, wealth, and spirituality. So for me, it's not being able to embody those and do those and experience those. I can zoom in on any of those, but it's just a life where I get to give my gift back, which is purpose. I believe your purpose is your gift to give back to the world. And it's an expression of your greatest core wound. So whenever you get tears of inspiration, you're perceiving or doing or embodying a bit of your purpose. So like I was telling you this morning, I just did a healing session and my highest value is coaching. For me, when I'm coaching people and having taken people through a healing process, a breakthrough, that the moment like when the penny drops and that heart opens, the tears flow, I cry. Like I get tears flow through me and I feel ecstatic today because I've just come from living my highest values to now here.
I'm coaching
again now. And so I'm having fun. I'm doing my, it's not like, fuck, I got to go do this fucking podcast with Georgia. Yeah. Oh my God.
I hope not.
So it's like, I'm inspired to be here. So it's just whatever. And you don't have to, like some people, like I used to be in the game of like trying to push people to change. It's like, if you fight for limitations, you get to keep them. If you want to stay where you're at, no judgment, no right, no wrong. If it's just what type of life do you want to live? And if you want to have a really stressful, unfulfilled, resistance-filled life, no judgment. That's just not the life I want to live.
That's powerful. I guess, have you always been like this? I'm wondering, when did the penny drop for you, or when did you decide, I'm going to start looking into my values and my limiting beliefs and my traumas, or have you always been a generally curious, inquisitive person?
Curiosity has definitely been around for a while. But why? How? Yeah. Why? So definitely always asked a lot of questions because I didn't understand things, because I look at things differently. That's the gift of Asperger's, is you just see things differently. So you'll see things people don't see. So you can do things that people can't do. So that's definitely always been there. I always looked at things differently and was curious of understanding how things work and why things work. So I feel like that's been a theme for me for a long time. There's obviously many different like little shifts throughout the years. Getting into self-development, Tony Robbins was my gateway drug into self-development.
He's everyone's gateway drug, or The Secret.
The Secret,
or Louise L. Hay, one of the three.
I didn't do The Secret tour a while afterwards, but have consumed it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Tony was my starting point. That was 10 years ago. And then, yeah, just obviously once you start, like, I love it. It's just like, it was just consuming.
The more you learn, the more you realize you have to learn.
Yeah. It's just like this endless Pandora's box of things to journey into, lean into, learn, embody, embrace, experience. And yeah, I absolutely love it. Very much addicted to it. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Something you mentioned before is values. You said many people think they know their values, but they don't. Yep. Please speak more on that.
Yeah. So trigger warning for everything I ever say. So for me, my interpretation of value is very much modeled off John DeMartini, Dr. John DeMartini and his work. I'm a DeMartini facilitator as well for people that are curious. But for me, values are areas of life that intrinsically fulfill you. Mm-hmm. And people have things that they think are values. They think traits, behaviors, emotions are values. Some of the most common ones is freedom. Freedom comes up all the time. I value freedom. I say, okay, great. Go do freedom. What does that look like? People are like, I don't know. So the example I use to prove that or to teach that, if I gave you, I'll use an example. If I gave you $1 billion, I don't have that much money, but if I gave you that much money and it's right now in your bank account and you never had to work again, you never had to do anything again, you instantly have time and financial freedom. Would you sit on your couch and do nothing, just watch Netflix for the rest of your life?
No.
Every single human being I've ever asked will say no. Then I'll say, great. What would you end up doing? Answer that question. What would you end up doing?
Yes.
Great. So this would be, how would you?
Connection or cool. like storytelling is cool. my a really big value for me.
Awesome. Fantastic. Yep. What else?
Health.
Fantastic.
Bettering my health and
Perfect.
Learning.
Perfect. Learning. Cool. Awesome. What else?
A sense of independence, like time. I understand the freedom thing, but trying to make that more tangible would be like, I'm in control of my time and my money. And
what
I don't,
do you use your time to do though?
Create,
of course.
Creativity.
Fantastic. Yep. So the common thing is can you do it? If you say independence, do independence.
Yeah.
It's like people say integrity, do integrity. Or control is funny. It's like you'll have control or want to control your values.
Yeah.
You'll want to be independent within your values.
So true. And then generosity as well is a big one.
But again, generosity is an action.
How do you do that?
Because are you generous with going and mowing people's lawns?
No, like empowering people.
Cool. Empowering them in what areas of life?
Their health and their, that was already a value, like their mindset and almost like coaching, I guess.
So you want to find it, and I'm just dancing with you.
That's cool.
There's 13 questions you go through to figure them out, but it's what do you talk about? What do you think about? What do you spend your money on? What lights you up? Mm. What do you research and read about? What do you talk about? I forget all the questions off the top of my head, but
so
you'll see the theme and you got to dial it into an area of life. If you can't do it, it's not a value. It's what people think of values, like honesty, freedom, loyalty, integrity, control. Those are character traits. If I said, go fill your calendar full of control, what the fuck does that
mean? Or independence,
It sounds weird. It just sounds weird to say, go fill it full of freedom. Okay, now do it.
Yeah,
it's
what like, do I do?
It's a bit weird, right? But if I can have coaching all through my calendar, I can have relationships all through my calendar, learning, wealth. Wealth for me is like investments, seeing wealth, increasing income.
Probably learning about wealth as well.
Learning about wealth. Yep. You'll want to learn about your values. So best measuring stick to understand if you are living concurrently with them. Low self-worth is feedback. You're not prioritizing your values. Because if let's use your example. Say, I think you said health, learning. I think you said coaching or mentoring or something like that. Say, let's just use those three. Say those three areas of your life were turning to shit. How would you feel?
Terrible. Like I had no purpose.
Perfect. And then you do it for a long enough time, it actually just spirals into depression. It
just becomes your life. Yeah.
So if you're struggling with self-worth, biggest check-in is go back to, if you don't know them, go figure out your values. And yeah, you just literally look at it and be like, okay, I'm not prioritizing. My brother's a great example. So my brother has attempted suicide before, been depressed, been anxious, been on all the medications, and it took him like 5 years to listen to me because I'm his brother. And he finally listened to me and we sat down and went through his values. I taught him all the stuff we're teaching. And then it was earlier this year. He gave me a call. I called him just to check in. And I said, how you been? What's news? What's going on? He's like, oh, honestly, I felt really depressed again at the start of this week. And I said, thanks for being vulnerable. What'd you do about it? And he said, oh, I remember what you told me. And it's like, when you're depressed, you're not living out your values. So I went back to my values and I looked at them and I saw that I wasn't doing any of them. So I went and did them. And now I feel great. I'm like, wow, crazy. It's like, just live a life according to your values. Whenever you hear you have to, you ought to, you got to, you should, you're supposed to, you must, or a version of that, someone's projecting their values onto someone else. If I say you should be a coach, you probably like that because
I don't have a value.
But if there's someone who hates coaching, if I say you should, you got to, you must be a coach, I'm just projecting my values onto you. Where it's like the best question to ask if you ever say that or receive it is according to who? And it will be whoever is the person or religion or society or entity that's projecting the values. Well, you don't have to do jack shit. You could right now quit your job, go live on the street, be homeless, and smoke as much drugs as you want to. I'm not saying that's the life I want to live, and I'm not going to judge you if that's what you want to do, but you could do it. There's no one stopping you from being there. So if you're listening to this podcast right now, no one's forcing you to do it. You're doing this or listening to this podcast because at some level, this podcast is going to benefit your values, or learning might be one of your values.
Yep. So interesting, because that understanding of values, like, you might not even be aware of your values. Therefore, you're living a life that's not in alignment. This has just been my journey. Like I was speaking to the previous guest, for 10 years, I've been in corporate media, like marketing, media, storytelling, all those things, feeling really unfulfilled, not really knowing why, knowing that I had more inside me and I had a better life to live, but chasing the next promotion and the next pay rise. And then eventually moving to LA. That was like the top of my pinnacle of my mountain. And then I literally got to LA, sat down and thought, I don't even want to be here. Like, I actually hate this place. Yeah. And this is not in alignment with who I am at all. So now I'm transitioning and pivoting more into like the health and wellness space and sharing my gifts and storytelling and whatnot. So I think values can change, because at a time I probably would have told you that a really top value for me would have been, I don't know, is hard work a value? Like,
hard work and what? What were you working? Could it be career?
Yeah, it was career. It was just career. It was like, I wouldn't date anyone in case they would derail my career. I knew I wasn't going to have kids in my 20s because it was like not for my career. And now I'm like, that's just not where I'm at.
Yeah. Values do change, and that's why you redo them. So every 3 months I redo them. Right. I'm actually doing mine tomorrow. So I'm going to go back and it's like how a business does a quarterly review, do a quarterly reset. Best thing, I've been doing it for 7 years. Best thing, it keeps me aligned, keeps me checked in, keeps me from burning out, is redo values, purpose, mission, vision, and your master plan for your life.
And you use goals attached to those values?
Master plan is the goals.
Right.
So master plans is your purpose. I do values first because they tie into your purpose. So values first, then we do purpose. And purpose is your gift to give back. It's what lights you up the absolute most. It's an expression of your biggest core wound. So it's aligned with all of your values. Mission is a 5 to 10 year goal, which is a measurable goal, which comes from your purpose. So my purpose is to heal and expand consciousness. A measurable goal of that is to coach 10 million people to live a life that they love. And then your master plan breaks that down to how you're going to get there. So 3 year goals, 2 year goals, 12 month goals, quarterly, monthly, weekly, daily. So then you've got clarity on what to do. And then you address the limiting beliefs and the bullshit that's going to stop you from doing that.
What if you don't have a plan that is that detailed? What if you're just like, in 10 years' time, I want to be doing XYZ, and you can kind of see it in your future, but you don't have the daily and the weekly plan?
Look, everyone's different. Like, the way my mind operates, and I enjoy structure, but like I listen to Chris Williamson and he said something recently on his podcast of like, he hears people talk about goals and planning and all that stuff. He's like, mate, I've got no plan. I'm just taking this day by day. But if I was to speak to him, which is on my vision board, I want to get on this podcast one day, but
I'm sure you will.
One day I'll get there. But I would say he has thought of it. Like, he's not just like, oh, let's do this today because why not? It'll be like, I want to take it here. There'll be a vague one. He might just not have written it down. But from 90% of the mentors I listen to, having clarity, having structure, having discipline, success loves structure, success loves discipline. So for me, I like having more structure, but obviously being okay to not have structure as well and be able to flow with life. So everyone's different. But if you're like, I don't know where I'm going, I don't know what's fulfilling to me, I don't know where I want to go with my life, then I would probably lean into a bit of structure and just find your happy medium. I'm probably on a spectrum 1 to 10, 10 being insanely structured, 0 is none. I'm probably like an 8. I do like freedom to do whatever I choose to do, which would be my values. But I do also like having structure, so I know how I'm getting there, I know how I'm planning.
Yep.
Do you know Natalie Patterson by any chance? Do you know that name? So she's a good friend of mine. Subnet. So I'm in a mastermind with her, and she runs events. She's killing it, making like 300 grand a month. Like, she's doing really, really well.
Incredible.
Really, really well. She's running events, and I'm about to start running more events next year. And she's like, we just spent like 3 days together. And she's like, oh, so when are you running your next event? I'm like, oh, like February. She's like, February? I'm like, yeah, I need to plan it out. I need to structure to have it ready. I'm like, and she had like an Australian tour starting today, actually. It kicks off today. I'm like, oh, well, are you ready for your Australian tour? She's like, oh, no, I haven't thought about it. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm just like,
it's tomorrow.
But literally, you're starting like this week. So she's like, oh, I just trust it will come through me. I'm just like, epic. So,
wow. So,
again, like, there's different personality types. So there's no right nor wrong. I prefer more structure, but having absolute zero, no clarity, no future, no vision, no clarity at all, I think it would serve most people to have something. And then you find, I guess, to what degree you want to take it to.
Yeah, amazing. I think I'm a bit of both. I love structure, especially when it comes to like my week, just because I want to be able to carve out time to learn, to connect, to grow, all these things. Yeah. But then in the grander scheme of my life, I'm like, okay, well, I know I have the skill set, I know I'm constantly improving, and I know what I want my life to look like. So if I just keep showing up every day doing all those things, then I trust that the opportunities will come. So that's my approach.
Firm but flexible. That was the last
thing. Firm but flexible,
I'll leave on.
Something else I heard you say in a few interviews was knowledge versus embodiment.
Yes.
Can you expand on that?
I generally use it when it comes to like learning from people.
Yeah.
So like, I have a lot of people say, oh, like, how do you heal and then that's generally the question I'll answer. So how do you heal? You need to have the right tools, the right processes, and the right coach, mentor, or therapist, or whoever you're working with. And then the three steps I recommend checking off for who you're going to work with is, number one, are they an embodiment of the work that they do? Mm-hmm. So do they actually, oh, sorry, I missed the first step. First step, do you feel safe in their presence?
Right.
Because to do any inner healing work, depending on the modality you're using, but for most modalities, there's a level of vulnerability that's required.
Trust.
And that requires trust, that requires safety. So if you don't feel safe within their presence, it's going to be very hard to do inner healing work. So that's the first one. Do you feel safe in their energy, in their presence, in their space? Second, are they an embodiment of what they do? Because I've come from the fitness industry, and with all respect, I don't even know who this person's name is, but I was hiring a trainer. I was looking for a position for a trainer, mm-hmm. put up an ad on Seek, and they came down, and this guy was 140 or 150 kilos and not fit, like overweight. And he's like, well, I got my Cert 3 and 4 in fitness. I'm like, so you got some knowledge. I'm like, well, and I couldn't say that legally. I would have got a fine if I did that. I got sued if I did that, but had to politely decline that application because he just wasn't embodying the stuff that he was trying to help people with. So for me, it's like, I have a lot of people that come to me and say, look, I tried this coach, I tried these therapists, I tried this stuff, but the person that was trying to heal me and help me, I thought they needed their own therapist. Mm-hmm. And I still heal. I'm not saying I'm perfectly healed. I've still got shit to work through. I'm still working through.
The work never ends.
The work never ends. Yeah. There's always more to heal through. So for me, embodiment is actually being an embodiment, being an example, taking your own medicine, walking your own talk, and actually doing the things that you preach. Yeah, participating in your own rescue, because I find you can intellectualize as much as you want and you can read a fucking book and regurgitate it back to me if you want to. I used to do that too. But being able to actually get in the trenches and actually work on yourself, do the processes. I'm obviously referring to coaching right now and healing, but whatever you're doing, whatever your passion is, whatever it is you want to help people with, like be the embodiment of who they want help with and what they want help with. So
so interesting. I also interpreted it as like knowledge versus embodiment. You almost need both. Like, for example, something I'm working on at the moment is I've done all this therapy and like mental work on healing trauma, which has been amazing, changed my life, EMDR, all these tangible things. And then I'm like, there's something missing. Like I would still get triggered by my partner. I would still feel like it's just there still. Like I know intellectually all these amazing things that have helped me, but why is it still there? Oh, the other puzzle piece, no embodiment. Yep. Like hadn't done any somatic work, hadn't done any body healing. So now I'm working with a few different people for that. But I just think, yeah, we need both. We need the intellectualizing and the understanding of our problems from that angle.
Yep.
And then also the other angle to come in through the body.
Yeah, 100%. There's five bodies. There's the mental body, which is what you're referring to at the start, which is beliefs, trauma, mental trauma, perceptions, memories, judgment, resentment, anything mentally, consciously or unconsciously that you can work on, that's mental body. There's physical body, which is somatics, which is the body work, which is physical massages. Breath work can fall into that. Depends on the modality.
I've been getting massage. Yeah. Like there's actually spots in my body that have so much resistance and I automatically like want to swap the person away.
Yep.
And he knows that. And so he's very trauma aware. And we're doing that.
Yeah. There's, you might not be here long enough to get it. There's a lady on the Gold Coast I get kahuna massages from.
Oh,
so they're Hawaiian emotional massages, essentially.
Yep.
So they're essentially massaging emotions out of your body.
Wow.
Like I've dislocated this knee 6 or 7 times through football. And literally when she came to my knee, I literally knee jerked and I'm like, and I'm aware of this stuff. So I'm like, oh, fuck, there's a lot of shit in there.
It's interesting. You're like logically telling, tell my back and my ribs, like, it's okay. You're safe. You trust this person. But the body's like, no. Nah. Yeah.
The body keeps the score.
So,
yeah, so that's a body somatic tool. There's emotional tools. So my main forte is mental and emotional. They're like just my strengths. I work online.
Physical,
I don't really see many humans besides podcasts. So mental and emotional. So emotional is your nervous system and stored and suppressed emotions. So those are my two fortes. So mental, physical, emotional, spiritual. So that's your connectedness to God, source, spirit, whatever it is, that you are divine and wholeness and completeness. That's where plant medicines, meditations generally come into it. And then the fifth is one I don't understand the most about is energy body. So the energetics. I worked with a Reiki healer for 6 months, literally just to experience it, to see what it was like. And it was really awesome. Like she was doing things. It was funny because she went to my knee again and she's like, what happened to you? Like I was on the floor, eyes closed, breathing. And I don't know what she was doing, but she was like, had her hands doing something. And she went to my knee and she's like, what happened to you when you're 4 years old with your dad? And like something just came up to me. I was like, oh shit, this happened. She's like, breathe out, scream, make the noise, shake it out. And then it like went away. I was like, holy fuck. I like, didn't know that was there. I don't understand it because it's not my forte, but yeah, that's
so powerful.
Down the spectrum of spiritual woo-woo stuff, but very open to it. But yeah, not my forte of teaching. Yeah. So yeah, they're the five bodies. And the thing is, most people get trapped in one of them because it's where they started. It's like, I did therapy, changed my life, but I'm intellectualizing. Yeah. I had after my group call I had this morning, I had an onboarding call, So when people join my community, they get an onboarding call. And after the group call, one of the ladies that was on it was the person I had the call with. So I actually spoke to her twice. And I said, oh, how you go? And we did the process. She's like, oh, and she's a doctor. And she's very intellectual, very, very intellectual. She's like, oh, I just struggle with it. I was just in my head. And because my process is mental and emotional, I get them to feel emotion. She's like, I just struggle feeling it. And I'm like, that's okay. That's just, you've been caught in the mental body, which is cool. I was there too. NLP, timeline therapy, DeMartini, all that shit. Where it's like, that's just something to lean into. Exposure therapy, practice it. Like practice feeling emotions. And especially as a feminine, most of my clients are women. And what I see is the gift of the feminine and one of the greatest strengths is your ability to feel. Like you are so emotional, not in a negative way, just that elusive and attractive, repelling, that dance of the emotions is so powerful within women.
I always say this to my partner. I'm like, you are very quick to move through your emotions. I need to feel them. Like I actually need I need time to just sit with it and let it process. And then when I'm ready, it will release. But I was like, you can't rush me. I have to feel it.
Yeah. And I'm very similar in that sense. So I think that's why I attract quite a lot of women with my clients. But what we're saying is mental body is very intellectualizing and it's actually a big form of dissociation. Well, all of them are. If you just get caught in one, you get stuck there. Like I've got mates who are smashing ayahuasca every weekend and they're smashing mushrooms like, all the fucking time. It's like I've done it 27 times. Why? Like, why do you do it? I do, I was actually going to have a trip tomorrow for my reset. I'll generally do it every 6 months and just have a big reset and reconnection.
With mushrooms?
Yeah, with mushrooms.
Yeah.
And I'll do that every 6 months, if that. I've done it in about 8 months, but if you need any of the tools or you're stuck in one of the tools, that's where you actually have resistance and that's where actually lean into the other ones. Maybe it's time to try breath work. Maybe it's time to try a somatic process or a spiritual process or something else. So
incredible.
A quick break from the episode to speak about our reviews. Now, Life Chats has recently hit over 30,000 listens, which is honestly incredible. So exciting. But we only have 18 reviews on Apple Podcasts, which is a bit sad. So it would mean the world if you could just take 1 minute out of your day to leave a written review for us, either on Apple or Spotify. There is truly so much time and care and effort that goes into these episodes. I research, edit, host, distribute, do everything all by myself. And I don't make any money from this show. I do it because the stories deserve to be heard and I truly love it. So if you could do that review, that would mean the world. You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Life Chats Podcast if you don't already. The goal is to build a bigger community so I can continue producing these inspiring conversations. Thanks so much for being here. Back to the episode.
I'm sure this is all in your book as well. There's so many tangible activities. Yep. Let's talk about limiting beliefs because that's a big part of your work.
Yep.
Why is it so important?
I start from the top. So your ego is the identity of who you view yourself to be. People think ego is a bad thing. Ego is just you. We have meat suits that we engage in life with senses that we experience life through. But all of your beliefs, all of your memories, the identity of everything that you have gone through, experience and who you are, that's your ego. And people think it's a bad thing. It's got your positive and negative beliefs. Best example is a computer. You got a computer right there. When you got that computer, did it come with default programming so it operated? Of course. And when we're born as kids, we have that. So, and without that, we wouldn't operate. So you need that. But if you downloaded viruses on that bad boy, it would shut down, it would malfunction, it wouldn't operate optimally.
Yep.
It would self-sabotage itself. And that's what limiting beliefs do. And you download them. I say you're born limitless, but you're programmed out of it. I've never met a baby whose first words were, I'm not enough. Either of you, right? So we're not born like that. We're born creative. Think of like, I haven't got kids, but I don't know when they start talking, 2 or 3, 5, whenever they start talking. And they're like, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be this. Yeah. I want to do this. Like, they can do anything. But then it's like, you're too much. Get your head out of the clouds. Be realistic.
Money's hard to come by, all these things.
And they're all the limitations you download. And the challenge with it is your ego has two main traits. There's three, but two of the main ones is one, it avoids pain. So that's where if I ask you something within trauma or wounds or things you're insecure about, you're going to deflect, attack, defend, disassociate, just not want to go there. So that's why it stops you from healing. So that's why it's challenging. And the second part is it makes itself true. This is the confirmation bias of you find things to reaffirm the things you believe. If you believe you're not good with money, you will make it true. If you believe you're not worthy of love, you'll make it true. If you believe all the good men or good women are taken, you'll make that fucking true.
Wow.
So they're the two big reasons why. The third one is it gets addicted to accumulation. So it always wants more, 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 more. I'm never satisfied. And that's where you kind of mentioned that with your career where you're like, got to the pinnacle and I'm like, oh, is that all there is? That's the third one. I don't talk too much about that one. So it's essentially bringing awareness to where do you have those limitations. This is where it gets a little bit slippery because you've got limiting beliefs and trauma. For me, limiting beliefs, are very powerful and they both have their place and purpose, but it's kind of like the right tool for the right time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have, most people that have done some form of self-development have done some Tony Robbins, some NLP, something to do with beliefs, and it's very powerful. And I've got a unique way of how to get rid of them, but you want to get rid of them. But the thing is, when you have a trauma, a moment in time when something was too much, not enough, you'll often create limiting beliefs mm-hmm. from that. So say you got rejected or you got abandoned, you got hurt, you got criticized or something. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment where it was too much, not enough, that's an imprint in your mind of something traumatic or something that mm-hmm. was lopsided. From that moment, you also created beliefs that I'm not worthy. I'll use one so we can keep it congruent, say rejection. So you had a moment in time where you were rejected. And then you also created the beliefs that I'm not lovable, that I'm not good with relationships, that men are assholes or whatever. You can take care of those beliefs. And that's actually not that hard. It takes me like 5-10 minutes to do that. You can, once you know what you're doing, you can do it super quick. However, this is where NLP has its limitation or belief work has its limitations. You get rid of the beliefs. Fantastic. You'll have shifts. You'll elevate. You'll be more authentic. You'll have a better quality of life. But if you still don't come back and address the moment in time that was traumatic, you will still get triggered by it. And it's where a lot of people, like I did NLP and I experienced the same thing. It's like, I've done this. Work through all these beliefs. I can self-reflect. I can internalize. I can understand mm-hmm. it, but I still get triggered. I still have resistance. I keep self-sabotaging. I'm like, what am I missing? Well, you haven't integrated the wounds yet. So that keeps playing out. So
what if you can't remember the moment?
You will attract people and circumstances to reveal where you haven't healed. Right. So if you just be aware when you triggered, nothing triggers you. It reveals what's inside of you. Unless you're in danger. If someone walked in here with a gun, you and me would get triggered. Yeah. We would either go fight, flight, or freeze. Yeah. So outside of physical danger, when you get triggered, it's revealing either a limiting belief mm-hmm. or a trauma. It can be both because they can go together yep. or they can be different. I'll use examples. So say, I'll use rejection again. So say I rejected you. Say that was a wound of yours. Yep. And say I rejected you right now or something happened and you perceive someone rejecting you. It would trigger you, mm-hmm. which would then activate a coping strategy to you. Dissociation, fight, flight, freeze, anger, frustration, drinking, smoking, whatever yours are. So that could be it. Or it could be a limiting belief where it's like, I'm not loved. So say someone, you go to do something or someone says something to you that goes against your belief or challenges that belief, it will startle you. I like to use extreme examples so people get points. Religion's a good example for this. For people, if you've probably met them, that have super hardcore religious beliefs, it's like God, Jesus, whatever beliefs they're believing in. And they're super rigid with those beliefs. And this is the truth. If you get someone who has the complete opposite beliefs to that and put them in a room together, they're going to trigger each other because
yep.
they're challenging what their beliefs are. So whenever someone reveals or displays something that reminds you of a trauma, that will trigger you.
Yeah.
Or someone either challenges your beliefs, that will trigger you. So you've got to discern between the two. And that's part of the game. It's like, okay, I'm triggered. The goal is to discern, is this a limiting belief being challenged or is this a trauma being revealed? Mm. Now, it can be both. So this is why you can do processes on both. Because the thing is, you can have a moment in time of too much and not enoughness, which is a trauma, with limiting beliefs attached to it. Or you can just have limiting beliefs that you just got conditioned with. That money doesn't grow on trees. It's like you didn't have to have a huge traumatic moment of money to get that. You just got conditioned that. So that's why you want to be aware of both and have a tool and a process for both. Both of those are in my book and that's what I teach. So depending on what it is, if it's a limiting belief, it only takes sort of 5-10 minutes to do the process. To do the trauma process, to do it properly, 45 minutes to 90 minutes to do it properly.
Amazing. Should we do the limiting belief activity?
Let's,
the
process? Let's rock and roll.
Okay, let's go.
So it depends just because on what the individual is. In this context, I'm just going to be super, super broad. Sure. Can I use you as an example?
Of course.
Perfect. So for the people listening, you can use anything. The goal is, I'll teach you it, then we'll go through it. So the goal is to find the moment where you downloaded the belief, because most of it will be in childhood, because intellectualized people like you and me, we will intellectualize things till the cows come home. So for example, when you were 6 years old, you come running home from school and you've made mum and dad this great painting that looks like shit, but you say, hey mum, look at this painting, look how great it is. And they're like, sorry, Georgia, I'm busy. I've got something on. Oh, that means I'm not worthy of love. I'm not enough. I'm unseen. Yeah. My needs don't matter. It'll be something simple like that. But then that can be intellectualized to like this big elaborate belief later on. So we want to find the foundation coding, the default coding. Because when you find the root cause of it, a deck of cards is a good analogy for it. So you got a deck of cards. The first card is the original download. And then you have the confirmation bias. So then you find all these references to back up and support that belief. And then it like builds itself up. You've got all this evidence of why you're so fucked up, essentially.
Yeah.
So we're going to find the earliest moment, okay? Now you can use anything. You can use triggers. So when someone gets triggered, depending on the person, what I feel it's coming from, if it's a belief or it's a trauma. If it's a belief, I'll use the trigger and say, go to the first moment you experienced the trigger. Mm-hmm. So say I used a client, she felt embarrassed. So I say, go to the first moment you remember feeling embarrassed. And she was like 4 years old in school, something happened, whatever. So just for now, to circle this back, for the people watching, the easiest one to start with is the first moment that you felt like you weren't enough. So close down your eyes for me and take a big deep breath in. And go to the first moment that you remember feeling like you weren't enough.
It's going to sound so ridiculous, but I feel like when my brother was born.
Okay.
And then
go,
I was...
Go to that moment. Now, how old were you when that you perceived that?
Three.
Now, through the eyes of your three-year-old self, what is it that you saw and experienced?
Oh, just that my parents were like busy with my brother.
Fantastic. Yeah. So brother's born, they're busy with brother.
And my mom was really sick after his birth. So she was just like battling her health.
Fantastic. Beautiful. Now, I normally do an emotional piece here as well, but I don't know if I want to fuck your makeup up. So,
we'll try.
So go back to that moment, get into the moment of when it happened. So you're 3 years old, brother's born, you are not getting the attention, he's getting all the attention. In that moment, what was the core emotion that you felt?
I don't know if like forgotten is an emotion, like sad.
Sad, yeah. Beautiful. Can you do me a favor and just feel the sadness of what you felt back then right now? Just breathe into it and let that little three-year-old who felt this emotion, who probably suppressed it, and actually let that emotion be felt. Breathe it into your heart. And breathe it out of you. Beautiful. Now, through the eyes of your younger self, so when you're 3 years old, seeing what it is that you saw, feeling what you felt, what is the decision and meaning that you created in that moment about yourself or about the world?
That I have to prove that I'm enough.
Beautiful. And what does that say about you though?
That I'm not enough.
Beautiful. Now, and just for the lesson as well, the first one you said was an intellectualized answer. That's the second tier one. I have to prove my worth because it means I'm
not enough.
Make sense? Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So what I want you to do, there's a concept of what people refer to as a universal truth. And a universal truth has to always be true. Gravity on Earth never turns off. Every human meat suit will decay and die. It has to be true 100% of the time for it to be a universal truth, right? I want you to find me three references of you, of this belief of you not being enough. I want you to find me three references of this not being true. And if you find resistance into it, which I think you just did, that's the ego trying to hold on to itself, right?
I'm like, okay, so three references where I am enough.
Beautiful.
Yep. Yeah, so in my beautiful, loving relationship where I'm completely authentically myself my partner loves me for who I am.
Love it.
In the way that I'm showing up and sharing my truth, is that
sure.
I feel like I'm enough to be able to speak my truth and use my voice and do this work and that it's enough.
Love it. One more.
And this is not specific, but I just feel that I am now.
Beautiful. Go to a moment where you are. Could be right now, right here if it is.
Yeah, right now.
Beautiful. Now, if I was to cut you open, literally like a doctor, like a surgeon, would I find a manufacturing stamp inside of you, a physical one, saying your name, Georgia, born, where were you born?
In North Gosford.
North Gosford. And she is not enough. Would I find that?
That's so sad. No.
Why not?
Because I just innately am, because I'm a human and we're all enough.
Beautiful. Because you weren't born with this belief, right? Mm. You just downloaded it. So I'm about to ask you a question. I want you to let your heart feel it and you let your heart answer it. Take a big breath in. I'm going to ask you a question three times in a row, okay? Is it an absolute truth that you're not enough?
No.
Beautiful. I want you to say it with your nervous system and your heart this time. Is it true that you're not enough?
No.
Beautiful. One more time. Breathe in. Is it true that you're not enough?
It's not fucking true.
Beautiful. Now, what I want you to do, this is the magic question. Let your heart feel it and let everything flow through you, what comes through you. How does your whole life and your whole reality change with this belief not there anymore?
It's so expansive.
Feel into it. How does your whole life change with this belief not there? God.
I feel like I can just do anything.
Yeah. Like what?
Like.
Be specific.
Like do whatever I want for my career, make whatever money I want, live wherever I want.
How does your relationship change?
My relationship with my partner?
Yeah. How does it change with this belief not there anymore?
It actually, I don't know if it does change because I feel enough with him.
Perfect. What else changes?
The way I show up. Like I feel like I can just be myself and I don't give a fuck what anyone else thinks and there's no judgment because I know I'm enough, so I'm just going to do it anyway.
Beautiful.
And that there's no limits holding me back and I don't judge myself.
Fantastic. What else?
I feel like my work matters and it has impact.
Beautiful. What emotions become available to you with this belief not there anymore?
It's like safety.
Can you feel that right now for me? Breathe into it. Through your heart.
So good.
Feels good, nice. What else? Wow. What other emotion comes to you?
Calm.
Beautiful. Generally lightness, calmness, yeah. Safety.
So good.
Now, with that belief not there anymore, because it's not true, right? What belief replaces it?
I'm always enough.
Can you feel that for me right now?
How good.
Feels nice, huh?
So good.
Beautiful. And that doesn't take that long to do. The magic is finding the moment. And I just use a general one because everyone has a moment of not feeling enough. It might be smart enough, beautiful enough, intelligent enough, or whatever. I'll use an example that I use with a client. So she got triggered. And for me, it felt like it was a limiting belief. So I used this tool. I didn't use the other tool. She had resistance. To the degree you resist reality, it's the degree that you suffer. So wherever you have emotional resistance, there's a belief or a trauma playing out. So if you just zoom in on that and come in with curiosity and like, okay, is this a belief? Is this a trauma? What's going on? Anyway, so I used this that same tool on her. And she had resistance to talking to her sales team. And I said, well, what's the fear? She's like, embarrassment. I don't want to be embarrassed. I said, fantastic. So I said, drop in. What was the first time you got embarrassed? So I just used the belief or the trigger, find the first time you remember experiencing that because you want to find the most default belief, not the intellectualized, like elaborate one now.
Yeah.
It's like you want to find the real, real cool one. So I said, go to the first time that you feel like you were embarrassed. And she found it. She started crying straight away. She was in prep school, kindergarten, whatever. And the teacher did this really cute exercise. The teacher handed out all these cards with two lines on them and you had to write down how you view yourself to be and give it back. And then the teacher reads it out and you have to guess who it is. I thought it was really cute. And then my client though, she wrote down, I'm pretty nice to people on different lines. And the teacher only read out the first line. So she said, I'm pretty. And then the whole class starts laughing. My client at this time was really overweight and she was like the opposite of how she saw herself. So she started crying and ran out the door. I said, in that moment, what did you decide? My needs don't matter. And then so when she got up to speak in front of her team, that resistance of being embarrassed was revealing the belief that she believes her needs don't matter. Went through this process, cried, felt lighter, all that good stuff. And I'm like, when's your next meeting with your sales team? She's like, oh, it's tomorrow. I said, how do you feel right now? She's like, I don't feel any resistance to it.
Wow.
Like, perfect. Because you're not trying to protect yourself from that belief anymore because the belief's not there anymore.
So powerful. I love doing that because I've always been aware that I've had maybe two or three limiting beliefs that I can like very clearly identify and I know how they're holding me back in life and also how they've informed my life. Like that belief of not being enough has caused me to overachieve, work 10 years in a career I've hated, constantly try and prove myself, constantly have three jobs. Like it's crazy how that manifests.
Spiritually relate to you right now.
Yeah, it's just a lot. Like I knew it was there though. I was like, I fundamentally am doing this to prove something. Like why does that exist? So I feel like if anyone's listening and they're kind of aware that they have beliefs that are holding them back, literally just rewind and go back through that process because I'm going to do it a few times with a few others I have.
Yeah,
it's
you
so
just
powerful.
Insert whatever the belief is or the trigger and just go back. When was the first time I felt like I was too much or I felt like rejected? I felt embarrassed. I felt stupid. Boom, let's go back. I was in whatever. And it can be the most subtlest things. It could be like that example I said, you run home with a painting. You're like, oh my God, look at this. And mum and dad are stressed because they just got bad news. And they said, sorry, Georgia, we're busy. Go away.
Yeah. Oh, but you make it mean that you're rejected.
And then that's the first card. And then you find all the shit to support it and evidence to confirm it. And then you live life living it.
Absolutely.
Not a good time.
Yeah, so. It's just profound work though when you do this work. I guess kind of want to change pace a little bit and talk about another very pivotal part of life, which is relationships.
Yes.
You speak a little bit about the three stages of relationships. Yep. What are they?
The honeymoon period, the triggered stage, and the conscious growth stage.
So what is happening in the triggered phase? Because I feel like we have these people that are stuck in these perpetual loops of either, yeah, they love the honeymoon phase and then it all gets too much, yep, or they just want stability and certainty and they want to be in long-term relationships. They can't be single, I guess. Yep. How is this impacting our lives?
Yeah. So when you first meet someone, like everyone, not at all times, very, very, very often throughout their days, we're wearing masks and personas. So like we've just met each other. I think we're quite authentic people. Yep. Like I don't feel like the massive ego with you,
yep,
but there would be parts that like I haven't shared with you my deepest, darkest trauma
and
today.
Me too.
So we're showing parts of ourselves, yeah, to each other. We're not showing us like the full depths of each, mm-hmm, other. So to some level, we're putting on a persona. It's the part of us that we highlight and that we're proud of, but we hide the shit we shame and we're not proud of. So in the honeymoon period, that's when you generally get the highlight reel of like, yeah, this, like the good sex, the effort, the pride, this, all my achievements, look how great I am. And I'm going to avoid all that bullshit because you might not love me if I have, yeah, those things. But the reality is everyone has shit. Everyone has trauma. Everyone has shadows. Everyone has things to work through. So that's where the honeymoon period is generally the highlights and the electricity and all that good stuff. And then the triggered stage is where you start to see those parts. You just start to reveal them. You start to trigger each other. You start to see parts of each other. You start to see the skeletons in the closet.
Yeah.
And most people just aren't willing to work through it. It's too much.
Do they just not know how to?
I'd say so. Everyone's doing the best of what they have. Like, yeah, I didn't get taught how to regulate my emotions when I was younger. I didn't learn about limiting beliefs or trauma or perception or anything like that. I got taught, take medications and that will solve the symptoms and suppress the problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, people just aren't aware of it. So once you can't be held accountable to something you're not aware of. Mm. So once you become aware of it, with great power comes great responsibility, is then you have the awareness to work through it. Nothing triggers you. It reveals what's inside of you. So when your partner triggers you, in that moment of trigger, the moment of like snapping or whatever your coping strategy is, your partner or whatever's going on is revealing a part of you you haven't worked through. It's either a trauma or a limiting belief, what we've been speaking about this whole podcast. So most people aren't aware of it and they're doing the best they can and they're just blaming, projecting, whatever. But then when you become aware of it, you then have to be willing to obviously sit in the fire and go through it. Like we still have triggered moments. Like we had a little one, I think like a couple of days ago.
I was just about to ask you, how does this look in practice with your partner?
Yeah. In general, I'd say 8 times out of 10, they don't really blow up anymore. Like we had one literally 2 days ago where I can't remember what it was. It was about ordering Uber Eats. So like I was upstairs. I was about to, and I'm like, I didn't communicate very well. So it was very much my fault, this one. And I'm upstairs. I yelled downstairs. I'm like, hey babe, I've got another call. Can you order Uber Eats? But I didn't tell her what I wanted and all that stuff. Yeah. And she's like, what do you want? I'm like, I'm busy. Take care of it. And we had like a little debacle. We kind of got a bit snappy at each other. But within like 5 minutes, we apologize, take ownership. What did I do that triggered her? What did she do that triggered me? What did I do that triggered her? Take ownership of it, ask the questions, sit with it, breathe through it, regulate through it. Happy days. But then sometimes when you're fucking deep in your wounds, it's like it gets nasty.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of those. We haven't had one of those in a while, maybe like 12 months since we've had one of those, but they come up. Like they certainly come up. So best recommendation, become aware of it as best that you can. Regulate your emotions. Mm. So breath work, you can do a diaphragm reset where you push into your diaphragm and breathe into your diaphragm. And sometimes you just gotta sit in the fucking fire. Like there's no real magic pill. Just deal with it. Once the storms pass, then you can have self-reflection and go, okay, what did your partner do or not do that triggered you? What did you do or not do that triggered them? Bring that to each other's awareness and then hold each other accountable and support each other to work through it. That's where you need to have the tools to go do the tools.
Mm.
So that's where find a coach or a therapist or someone to do the tools with and do the work with. But yeah.
At what point is it your work to do and not your partner's work? Like I understand that partners have to support us through our own healing, but I find that line hard. It's like, okay, this is my work that I've got to go do, but I need to do it in practice with you. So yeah, how do you navigate that?
Look, there's a difference. The difference between the question I heard just said is what's the difference between a boundary and a trigger? So say for example, say I do a behavior that you don't appreciate in a relationship. Say I just come home, say we were dating and I said, fuck you, Georgia. Like, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, so it's like, that's not okay. So there's a difference between a boundary of someone, your partner doing.
That's like, just such a funny,
just
a
weird
end
one.
Of example.
Just fuck you.
Did you feel like getting that out?
Yeah, just why not? Express yourself, right? So
yeah.
Say your partner does something and the behavior itself is something you just don't appreciate. You're like, hey, look, I don't appreciate you doing that.
Yeah.
Versus it triggers you. Mm-hmm. So the trigger is yours. The trigger is yours.
Your work to do.
Your work to lean on. However, if your partner is doing something that, so for example, say you do something to me and it triggers me, that's on me. But you could do the same thing and it doesn't trigger you. It's a overstepping a boundary. I say, hey, I hope you're okay. I'm not sure what's coming up for you, but I'm just letting you know that's not okay.
Mm.
How did you handle, the difference between handling each of those is whether you're triggered or not. So the trigger is yours. Own that and take the gift of the reflection. So, okay, thank you for revealing a part of me I haven't worked on. Let me go heal through that. But at the same time, because you can have also someone who's triggered you and also overstepped a boundary. Yeah. So it can be one of the same. So it's like the trigger, that's yours. Own it. Go reflect on it. Go heal through it. And at the same time, communicate the boundaries.
Be so challenging in the moment. I feel like I'm working through this at the moment. My partner and I, we have like a pretty crazy story. We were long distance for 6 months. Like we built the whole first half of our relationship was long distance. Yep. And then I got home from America and we moved in together 3 days later after I got home. So it was like literally 0 to 100. And then we were doing all these things that were triggering each other and bickering and having fights and whatnot, but also not having the tools to, I guess, do what you just said, is like step back, express your boundaries, be calm. I was just reacting all the time, like reacting left, right and center. Yep. So I feel like I'm becoming better. And we also have this tool where we step back and say like, what is this actually about? Yep. Or what does this actually mean? What did what I just do make you feel like? Yep. How, what does it mean?
Yep.
And that just seems to kind of de-escalate any argument we've been having. Yep. Because the first few weeks was just me getting triggered, me making up reasons that he did things, having certain beliefs that weren't true. But he wasn't aware that I was feeling that, and it just becomes a mess.
Yep. Everything you're saying is perfect. And that's perfect. And it starts like that. You can't be held accountable.
Exactly.
Something you're not aware of. So take awareness. And it's just like that kind of knee-jerk reaction. If you're like, you hit it and you reflect and just react back to it, that's great. And then the next time, 10 seconds pass and you still react. That's okay. At least you've got 10 seconds in there. And then you get to a point where it's like you choose how you respond. It's like, okay. Because there's still been times where she's done something. Can I still feel my nervous system activate?
Yeah.
That's still a trigger. The more healing you do, the more subtle they'll become as well. It's like, it'll just be like, you'll just be walking down the street or just talking to family members and they just do something weird. They roll their eyes at you. They say something odd and you get a little twinge, you know, like a little bit of judgment.
Don't react.
Yeah, don't react. Regulate. But so the more work you do, the more subtle you do have to be. So I find people more higher level that come to me who have done a lot of work, like you need that like microscope to really zoom in on that. So yeah. Don't know where that came from.
But in terms of your microscope on yourself, like what work? You've done so much work. You've invested so much money in courses and mentoring and guidance. Like what are you still struggling with that you want to work on?
For me, I just let life happen the way it's meant to happen. So whenever I do a process now, like I'm referring to my balancing process, which is the trauma integration process. When you first start, I recommend do both your parents first, do a partner or an ex-partner first, and then whoever your life abuser was. And it might happen to be one of those people you've already done. I've done the process 15 times already. So done dad a couple of times, mom a couple of times, Georgia a fair few times. And then I just let life happen. So whatever triggers me, that's the opportunity. So if I was to use Georgia, and the thing is your partner is going to do the most of the reflecting.
His wife is named Georgia for everyone listening, by the way. We never clarified that.
I didn't clarify that. So yeah, that probably confused a few people.
Lewis's wife is Georgia.
My wife's name is Georgia and our beautiful host's name is Georgia. So my wife, Georgia, when she triggers me, I look at what is the trait that's triggering me. So one that's come up recently that I haven't done a process on yet is malicious. So that's one. So I've had the trait, because whenever you judge someone, think of someone that you just judge either a lot or just a little, like you just don't like them for some reason. If I was to say, tell me in one word, what's the trait, characteristic or behavior you judge them for? There's a wound in there. So I had this a lot, and transparently, I had it with women who were really confident.
Yeah.
Now that, and it took me so long. I was sitting with this phase because I'm aware of this shit. I'm like, I'll meet someone, they're super nice, but I just don't like you.
Yeah,
what is it?
Something about you.
What is it? I couldn't find the trait. And then my wife, Georgia, had a conversation where she really triggered me. And the trait was more obvious. And then I'm like, oh, that's what it is. She just said something that maliciously hurt me. Like she said, you deserve to be hurt. That's what she said. We were super triggered. Yeah. I said some nasty things too. Yeah.
It was mid-argument.
I had already done some things and hurt her. So this was one of the big ones about 12 months ago. But she said that and that really got me.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's malicious. And then I'm like, oh, that's what I see. And then that reflection of me judging those women for being like, that is the strong malicious trait. I'm like, oh. So I haven't done a process on that yet. So that would be one of them. It's just whenever you trigger.
When you have that wound, because I'm literally just remembering a moment in time where I had a massive argument with my mom. She said something similar, but what she said was just like a throwaway comment. But it honestly sent me into like 3 days of hysterics. I just could not believe how hurt I was by it. when you discover that wound and you know it's there, then what is it? Is it the limiting beliefs process?
I would do, it depends on it. My favorite one's my balancing process. Yep. That's the wound part. The goal is to find the trait. It's to find the action. So I can
help that
you.
Person.
I can find it right now with you if you want. So just remember, your intuition always knows the answer. Your intuition is your own body's homeostatic strategy. What I mean by that, it's constantly trying to bring you into balance. So if someone pumps your tires up and tells you how fucking great you are, you're like, oh, but I'm a piece of shit. I'm not that good. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Your intuition's trying to keep you humble. And if someone's like giving you heaps of shit, your intuition will bring you back up. Oh, I'm not that fucked up. I'm actually doing okay. So just keep that in mind. So I want you to get into that moment. You said mum just then?
Yeah.
So get to the moment where mum did this and whatever happened. Tell me when you're in the moment.
Yeah.
So in that moment, tell me what she did. What'd she say?
I was telling her that I had like texted her something and she said I didn't. And then I was like, yeah, I've definitely texted you. And she said, it's okay to be wrong, sweetie.
Okay.
But she said it in front of my whole family.
Cool. So get present. What's the word? At what word did she
dismissed.
Say? Dismissed.
I felt like when she said it's okay to be wrong.
Cool.
Sweetie.
Dismissed. Yeah. That's it. So you have a dismissal wound. And this is how trauma plays out. So dial your ears up, listeners, is whatever trauma you have is essentially a trait or an action or an inaction that you have judgment towards. That was too much or not enough. What happens is you actually attract it because you're trying to not look for it because you're trying to avoid it. It will also trigger you. So when someone would dismiss you, it will trigger you. That will also activate a coping strategy. I'm not sure what yours are, but you would have a coping strategy that would be activated. And you would also shame yourself when you do the same thing. So when you dismiss someone, you'd feel like a piece of shit. And you'd shame yourself and beat yourself up for it. And that will keep playing out until you integrate that piece. So my answer to that would be to do a balancing process on that. Mm. I could start doing that on you now if you want, but
probably need more time.
Yeah. do the process sort of 45
to
90 minutes.
I'm excited to do it outside of the body.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's that, and this is getting super deep for the people that can handle it. When you do a process, when you are triggered, it's the concept of wholeness and oneness and completeness. We live in a wholeness world, a completion world, a connected world, but we experience life through duality. We experience life through separation. Like through my eyes and senses, I see you over there and I see me over here. So I perceive separation. But in reality, or depending on your beliefs around it, is we are all connected in oneness. Life is always balanced, complete and whole. But we need to experience duality to come back to oneness. So you need something external to reflect back to you, a piece of you, that you haven't integrated yet, so you can learn to love and integrate that part of you. My current mentor, I love him, Cody, he said, beautiful line, when you're triggered or when you are reflected or when you judge something, there's a piece of you that's been scheduled to be loved. So that dismissal part is a part of you that you get to now work on if you choose to go work and integrate that and learn to love that part of who you are. And then you'll stop judging yourself for it and you'll still get triggered by it.
Amazing. I feel like I'm so excited to get my hands on your book and delve more into this work because it's interesting how you can know the work that you need to do, but just also feel a bit stuck, like you don't know where to start. So obviously for anyone listening who's like, oh my God, I have so much work to do. I'm reactive. I'm this, I'm that, I'm whatever judgments they're putting on themselves. Step one, buy a book. Step two, where else can they kind of get resources and connect with you and consume what you're teaching?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you and for having me. It's been beautiful.
It's been amazing. I've got one more question, but
awesome. So Lewis Huckstep, I have a website. I don't think it's very good, but I have a website. Instagram,
I'm sure it's amazing.
Instagram, Facebook. I'm on most social medias. I'm most active on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I have a conscious community where I go deeper because in the book, I've had to shorten some of the exercises in the book just because of the limitations of a book because I use like videos, spreadsheets, PDFs to teach the fullness of it. So I've done the best I can to put it into a book. But yeah, conscious community where you can come do some healing shit and work on yourself. But yeah.
Incredible. I have to finish this episode by asking you the same question that I ask every single guest. You can interpret it however you like, as many words, as little words as you like. That question is, Lewis, what is the meaning of life?
Meaning of life for me is, I've got a couple of meanings to it, but the one that came through for me is to honestly discover, it's the statue of David, to remove the parts that aren't you. It's to come back to who you authentically are. And give your gift back. And for me, that's your purpose. So it's about finding the authentic version of you, which is underneath the layers of parts that you've downloaded that aren't you. And to be able to give that fullness of who you are back to the world. When what you do is the fullest expression of who you are, you will do your life's best work.
That's so beautiful and feels so aligned. I literally journaled the other day. My goal is to find my way back to myself. Like just constantly be finding my way back to myself.
You're back home.
Yes. Thank you so much. You've shared, this has been a masterclass in all things self-development. And I think this is going to really change people's lives and perception on what's possible for them. So
thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please let me know who you'd love me to chat to next. Or if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, you can connect with me directly on Instagram at LifeChatsPodcast, one word. Until next time, I'm Georgia May, and this is Life Chats.